Om Sri Sai Ram. I offer my humble salutations at the lotus feet of our loving Bhagawan. I shall start my talk today with a prefatory note, which I do in all my talks, and that is to place the subject in its proper perspective. Dear friends, if there can be one single reason which should make all of us feel happy, joyful, thrilled beyond measure, notwithstanding the problems, the difficulties which we are facing, especially the global COVID pandemic, it is because we are born at a time when the Supreme Divinity, the Absolute Pure Consciousness, took a human form and appeared before us as Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. This phenomenon of incarnation or avatarhood is aptly described as the descent of divinity for the ascent of humanity. Fortunate indeed we are. We are not only fortunate, but doubly fortunate, because this phenomenon has happened in the past also. We have heard of Ramavatar in the Treta Yuga, Krishnavatar in the Dwapara Yuga. But in those avatars, the Lord belonged to a royal clan, princely in nature, and were not easily accessible or available to the common man. Though I have read in the book Krishna series by K.M. Munshi of Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, that Lord Krishna, especially when he used to be with Pandavas, a number of people used to throng that place, and the Lord would now and then come out, sit on an elevated platform, people would line up and have his darshan and pada namaskar. But still, all said and done, they were not that easily available to the common man. But in this avatar, we all know that Bhagawan came down, literally, so to say, mixed with us, mingled with us, and gave us the supreme gift of darshan, sparshan, and sambhashan. I would go a step further and say that we are indeed the most fortunate beings in this creation itself, because it is said when an avatar comes down, he is very liberal, charitable, compassionate. He may give anything and everything to anyone and everyone. But when it comes to selection of people for his avataric mission, for the very purpose which he has come, he becomes very selective and choosy. And to that rare group of selected individuals, we all belong. The members of Sri Satya Sai Seva organization, Sai devotees everywhere in Sai Seva, and other organizations which are directly or indirectly connected with our Satya Sai organization or the Satya Sai Central Trust. Yes, I can say emphatically, we are the most fortunate. I shall now try to substantiate my statement and assertion by quoting two incidents. The first incident was narrated to me by a senior member of our trust, very authentic. It seems on one particular day, This gentleman was with Swami in Bhagwan's room. They were alone, there was nobody else. Swami was looking very relaxed. This emboldened him to ask Swami a question. And he told in Telugu, it seems, Swami, oka prashna adagalna. Can I ask you a question? Swami said, yes. Then he asked Swami, it seems, Swami, we all feel we are very close to you. But can you please tell us to whom you are close? It seems Swami was a bit taken aback, and it also looked that he was a little reluctant and hesitant to answer, but nevertheless he gave the reply. He told him, it seems, to whom I have given my work, or through whom I am getting my work done, apart from these people, I am not close to anyone else. This is the first incident. The second incident finds its place in our Satyam Shivam Sundaram book, I think 7th or 8th edition. Some of you must have read it. A young man joins as lecturer in our Bangalore Vrindavan University campus. But after a few months, inexplicably he becomes dull, drab, and there is a strong urge in him to retire into solitude and do penance, tapas, meditation, etc. He goes and expresses this desire to the head of the institution, who tells him it needs Swami's permission and you can go to Puttaparthi and try out your luck. He comes to Puttaparthi. The very first day, Swami calls him for interview. And after Swami settles down, this gentleman makes his request. Swami told him, it seems, it is because of such tapas, penance, which you have done in hundreds of previous births, that you reached my lotus feet. Having come to my lotus feet, I have given you the rare gift of Sai Seva as my prasadam. Having come to post-graduation, PG, do you want to go back to KG, kindergarten? This was what Swami asked him, it seems. Anyway, so far, so good. But there is a problem here. Whenever I talk of these incidents, a few people at the end of the talk come and ask me, they accost me and say, sir, you are lucky, you have seen Bhagwan Sai Baba, you had his what you are called darshan, sparshan, sambhashan, but we have not even seen Bhagwan. I have a reply to this question and answer. We have all heard of Mrs. M.S. Subbalakshmi, a world-renowned Carnatic musician, winner of Bharat Ratna Award, India's highest civilian award, and winner of many United Nations Award also. She once came to Puttaparthi for Swami's darshan. She was allotted a small room, and one day suddenly Swami walked into her room. She was taken aback, but quickly regained her composure and told Bhagwan, Bhagwan, the room is adorned with so many beautiful photographs of yours. It is really so good, this room. Swami asked her, it seems, whose photographs? Swami, your photographs. Then Swami told her, it seems, it is not my photograph. It is me. That is, in the case of Swami's photograph, it is not one which represents him. It is Swami himself. And that is why Swami has said many times that even those who have seen only his photograph, even those individuals' lives are sanctified. And we all know Swami even now asserts or speaks only through his photograph. We have seen Vibhuti, the sacred ash, Kumkum, Amrit, nectar coming out of Swami's photo. Swami speaks only through his photo. So this must be a great solace for people who have not seen Swami. And even otherwise, we just now talked that it is not seeing Swami or getting an interview or getting a ring, chain, no. Getting Sai Seva as prasadam is the foremost of gifts which we can get from our master. But unfortunately, many of us, or perhaps most of us, do not realize the value and importance of this Sai Seva which has been bestowed on us by our compassionate Lord. On the one hand, we lead a very monotonous life. We take life for granted. I am born to so and so individual. I am born in this place. This is my native place. As a child, my duty is to go to school. As a slightly elderly young man, my duty is to go to college, get a job, marry, procreate children. And in the meantime, the wave of time sweeps him out of the world. On the other hand, we run after things which are trivial, temporary, and transient. This tendency of the human mind to lead a monotonous routine life and to run after temporary and transient things has been beautifully portrayed by Swami Shivananda, an eminent sage of Rishikesh. He used to sing the Mahamantra Kirtan incorporating this useless pursuit of the human mind like this. He used to sing, "Is there not a holy mission, eating, drinking, sleeping, bathing, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare." Our Bhagavan also has talked about this particular tendency of the human mind, knowing everything but not realizing it, in two interviews. The first interview I was not there, I was told. The second interview I was there. In the first interview, it seems, during the course of the interview, Swami suddenly circled his hands three times and brought out, materialized a beautiful ring. He showed it to everyone in that group, and suddenly he threw it to one side, and all of them looked at the ring. Then Swami told, it seems, "This is the mistake you are all making. The Creator is sitting in front of you, right in front of you. You have forgotten the Creator, and now you are looking at the created." Still better was the second interview, where fortunately I was there. I'll give you a brief background to it. We were a group of 30 young men. I was only 35 years at that time. It was in the year 1997. We booked a bus and planned to make a 3-day visit to Puttaparthi for Swami's darshan. We were made to sit in a separate enclosure. On the first day itself, Swami came near our group. The youngster in the first line asked, or rather pleaded with Swami, "Swami, please give us an interview." Swami said, "Chustanu" in Telugu. "Chustanu" means "I'll see." Normally, in those days, if Bhagavan says "Chustanu," it used to be followed by an interview. But the next 3 days, Swami did not come near us, did not even look at our group. We were a bit disappointed. 7 or 8 members of the group, they went back. They also had some works back at home. But on the 4th day morning, Swami called us for the interview. I was in terrible back pain because I had just then recovered from a very serious back ailment. Swami saved me. I did not tell all that's personal. And after we went and settled down in Swami's room, Bhagavan looked at me and said, "I am sorry I made you all waiting for 3 days. What to do? You all saw the ex-Prime Minister of India had come." And then Swami said, "This gentleman, when he was the Prime Minister of India, I don't want to give his name, when he was the Prime Minister of India, he used to phone every other day. As you know, I don't pick up the phone. My assistant boy used to pick up the phone. And he used to say, 'Please tell to Bhagwan that my post is in danger. People are working against me. I am on the verge of being overthrown.' I used to tell my assistant to tell him nothing will happen. Everything will be okay. Don't worry. But when this became day in and day out relentlessly, I got a bit vexed. I told my assistant boy, 'Tell him, let this post go. You will get a permanent post. You will become the ex-Prime Minister of India, which is a permanent post. This post which you are holding now is Prime Minister, maybe at the most for 5 years. So don't worry, you will get a permanent post.' We all had a big laugh, but Swami stopped us from laughing and said, 'You also should not run after things that are temporary and transient. Aspire only for that which is permanent and eternal, and that is God.'" And then Swami went ahead and started telling us how to keep the mind calm, composed, detached, not getting attracted by external distractions. And in the process, Bhagavan told another beautiful story. There was a fair, an exhibition going on in a town. Many people had thronged to the fair, Mela, what is called. And in that, there was a young couple with a sweet child. The child was about 5-6 years, very cute, attractive, and it was drawing the attention of all the people. The king of the town also had come, maybe to oversee the arrangements. He also saw the child and called the parents and told them, "Whatever or whichever item in this fair the child picks up, you don't pay for it. I will have the payment made at the end of the day." And he instructed his assistants, minister and all, to take care of them. And he went back to his palace. Late in the evening, he called the minister to confirm whether the payment was made. The minister said, "My dear lord, there was no need for that. The child had not taken any item." The king was a bit surprised. He said, "Go and call the parents along with the child." And when the parents came, the king asked them a bit sternly, "Why did your child not take any item? Did you stop your child?" They said, "No, sir. In fact, we were asking every other item, but the child would not take." Then the king looked at the child and asked, "My dear child, why did you not take any item?" The child did not give any reply. The king became a little angry, a bit furious, and asked the child, "What exactly do you want on this earth? Tell me, I will get you." Now the child responded. It lifted its arm and pointed its index finger at the king and said, "I want you. Because if I get you, I will get all that is in your kingdom." That is why it is said that if you get God, the kingdom of God shall be added to it. Anyway, the story was very impressive. But then we told Swami, "Swami, this is all very good. But in practical life, it is very difficult, Swami. The world is very hard to live. We have problems at every stage, right from birth, childhood, school going, college going, job, marriage. At every stage and step, we have problems." Swami said, "There is no other alternative. You have been driven to the wall. It is only the life spiritual, the life divine, which is an answer, which is the answer for all these problems, and which can confer eternal peace and happiness to you." And in the process, narrated us one more story. It was a hot summer day. The temperature was soaring to about 45 degrees or 46 degrees. There was an open field. There was a big coconut tree. The time was 12 noon, so the coconut tree had cast its big shadow, lengthy shadow, on the ground on the field. There came a young man in a cycle. He was very thirsty. He stopped the cycle, looked up, and saw there were coconuts in the tree. So he parked his cycle. He climbed the tree and plucked out two coconuts and slowly got down. He broke the coconuts, had the water, and thereby his thirst was quenched. After a few minutes, there came another cyclist. He also looked at the coconut tree, but he looked at the long shadow cast on the ground. He thought, "Why should I take the trouble of climbing the coconut tree? Let me climb the shadow, walk along the ground, and reach the end of the coconut tree. Very easily I can get the coconuts." And he did that. You know what would have been the result. Swami said, "The coconut tree represents your spiritual life. If you lead your spiritual life properly, if you climb the coconut tree as the first cyclist, you will automatically climb the shadow of the tree. That is, even your worldly requirements, worldly needs will be taken care of by the Almighty. But if you ignore the coconut tree, if instead you climb the shadow, you will neither be successful in the worldly sphere, you won't get anything, and not to speak about the spiritual life, because you have not even ventured into it." This was a story which really impacted me. Okay, agreed. We thought, yes, we agree that the life spiritual is the only answer to all our problems. And now we have to chalk out the path for ourselves. But still we find things very confusing. Because even in the spiritual field, some people say do japa, rolling of the beads. Some people say kirtan is the best. Some people say meditation, dhyana, kriya yoga. All these different types of sadhanas. And at one particular point of time, I was getting tormented by thoughts of words which I read: self-realization, God-realization, this life itself, we should realize the self, we should see God. All these thoughts were troubling me. And it looked, Swami added to the confusion. Because what happened was, I went to Puttaparthi along with four of my friends, along with the old students of Swami, who used to conduct medical camps in villages around Puttaparthi. We were specifically meant to do some cultural programs in the evening. We were good in that because we were regularly doing Gram Seva in villages around Hyderabad. The evening cultural program used to consist of predominantly a talk on health and hygiene by me and a drama on the ill effects of alcoholism. O anna ni kal mukta tagake in Telugu. That means, my dear brother, I am prepared to catch your feet. Please don't drink alcohol. So we used to do the program, and I, as a doctor also, would participate in the morning seeing patients. In the evening, we were made to sit in a separate enclosure. And on one occasion, Swami came near us and asked the doctor in the first row, how many patients did you see? He said, he gave some number. Then Swami said, how many patients did you treat? See the subtle difference which only the Lord of the universe can make out. Seeing is one thing, treating is another thing. And then Swami asked, how many of you are there? Some number was given. Swami said, no, it is not correct. There are more number of people. Perhaps some paramedics also you have made them sit. It is not that Swami is against paramedics sitting. He is for discipline. When you say it is a doctor's group, only doctors should sit. Otherwise you should tell Swami, doctors and paramedics. Swami has no objection. He is only for discipline. To cover up the situation, I went up on my knees. I was in the second row and told Swami, we did some cultural programs in the evening. And a few individuals who really worked hard for the success of that program, we made them also sit. Then Swami said, what was the evening program? I told Swami, we had a health and hygiene talk. I had delivered it. Swami said, Chala Santosham. Then I told Swami, we had enacted a drama on the ill effects of alcoholism. Then Swami asked, what did you act as? What role did you play? He knew that I was also in the drama, very small role. Then I said, Swami, as a doctor. Swami said, you are yourself a doctor? How can you act as a doctor? Everyone in the group and even some who heard a little away, they all had a big laugh at me. I was a bit confused. I didn't understand what Swami is trying to say. But back home, I knew that Bhagavan has said something which is deeply hidden. Because Swami has said that he will not waste even a single word. There must be some hidden meaning, something spiritual which Swami wanted to convey. And I was waiting for an occasion. And luckily, after a few months, I could talk to Bhagavan. And when I asked Swami, he said, no, that is only another way of my telling, I am God, you are God. I know I am God, you know you are not God. So I was happy with the explanation. And then again asked Swami, but Swami, please tell how exactly we should lead life. What exactly we should do and not. World is very difficult. Then Swami said in a very simple manner, you should lead your life just as an actor acts on the stage. The actor knows that in reality, he is not the role which he is portraying. In essence, he is something else. But still he acts perfectly. In the same way, you should lead your life. But I know it is difficult for you all because you are playing multiple roles. You are a son to your parents. You are a husband to your wife. You are a father to your children. You are a brother to your brothers and sisters. You are a neighbor in the locality where you are staying. And you are a worker in your workplace. But still, you have to play all these roles perfectly. And that is self-realization, Swami said. But Bhagavan added, in addition, you have to engage in a conscious exercise and that is called sadhana. And the sadhana which the Lord has given for this age, this stage of Kali Yuga, is a twofold one. Namasmarana, taking the name of the Lord on the one hand, and Nishwartha Seva, selfless service, on the other. Namasmarana, as we all know, is a simple, sweet, and apparently easy exercise or easy sadhana. But once when Swami was asked, "Swami, Namasmarana is such an easy sadhana, but we don't find people, a number of them, using it and attaining the goal of life." Then Swami said, "Even to take the name of God, it needs my grace." Whenever the glory of the name of the Lord is talked about, I am immediately reminded of an incident recorded in the books of our history. It's not a story, it's an incident about Sant Kabir Das, an eminent saint and sage. He did not live long back, not in Ramayana or Mahabharata times. I think about 300, 400 years back. Sant Kabir was a very pious and highly evolved soul. He had an extraordinary power. Anyone with leprosy comes, Kabir would place his hand on the palm of that individual and say, "Ram," and the disease used to vanish, it seems. It's not a story, it's recorded in our history books, I have read it. One day, Sant Kabir was not there at home. His son Kamal, a very noble child, was there. A leper came and tapped the door. Kamal opened the door and felt very bad that his father is not there. He thought over the matter and he decided, "Let me do what my father does." So he put his hand on the palm of the leper and told three times, "Ram, Ram, Ram." And when he opened his eyes, he found the disease had vanished. Kamal was overjoyed. He was waiting for his father to come back. And when his father came back, he told him in a loud voice, "I have done the most spectacular thing. I have cured a leper just as in the way you do it. I chanted Ram Nam three times and the disease vanished." Then do you think Sant Kabir praised his child or hugged him or patted him? No. He gave a big slap to him on his cheek. Kamal was astonished. He said, "Father, why are you punishing me? I have done such a good work." And then Sant Kabir told him, it seems, with tears in his eyes, "You fool, just to cure a small disease like leprosy, will you use the power of Ram Nam three times? You should chant only once. You should not waste the energy and power of Ram Nam and thereby even demean it." This is a story which somehow even now, if I read it, I become emotional. And believe me, my dear friends, I would have narrated this story in at least 200, 300 villages around Puttaparthi, in the evening mobile hospital, cultural and educational program. Now, surprisingly, I will tell you something to the contrary about Namasmarana. Paradoxical it looks. I had taken a team of super specialist doctors to Bangalore, where Swami was there at that time, for darshan. Swami came near us in the morning, and when I told that they are super specialist doctors, Swami said, "Take them to the hospital, show them the hospital. In the evening I'll talk to you." And in the evening he called all of us, and as we settled down, Swami asked, "Which aspect of my hospital did you like the most?" Every doctor had some reply. One doctor said, "Swami, the beautiful architecture." One said, "Swami, the huge chandelier with so many bulbs and light." One doctor said, talked of the state-of-the-art equipment. And one mentioned the unique free service which is being done there. But to each of these replies, Swami was moving his head both sides to and fro and disagreeing with them. And in the end, Swami said, "No, it is the Sevadal who are working there. They are my men." He really thumped his chest. Even if you employ paid workers, they will not keep the village, keep the hospital so spick and span. I am mentioning this incident because I know a few or perhaps even number of Sevadal will be listening to my talk, just to make them feel happy how Bhagwan used to feel for them. He told them they are my men, and also enthuse and motivate them. I just made that diversion. But coming back to what I said, that I would say something contrary about Namasvan, during the course of the interview, Swami suddenly looked at me and told me, I'll tell it in Telugu first, because that preserves the spirit of what was told. I shall make a translation. Swami said, "Naku japamu, tapamu, pujalu, punaskaralu, dhyanamu, dinito em sambandham ledu. Vallu vallu cheskuntaru, vallu ishtam." Swami said, "I don't have any connection with people who do puja, worship of the Lord, with people who do bhajan, singing the glory of the Lord, with people who do meditation, dhyana, and so on and so forth." I was shell-shocked, dumbfounded. "Swami, are you trying to contradict what you yourself have told in so many of your talks about the glory of the Lord's name and these spiritual practices? Are you trying to rewrite our scriptures?" The compassionate master looked at me and understood my mind plight, and he said, "You people think that you are doing puja, worship, by sitting in a small room and keeping a small idol or photograph of the Lord. You people think that you are doing bhajan by sitting in the bhajan mandir. You people think that you are doing meditation, dhyana, sitting and closing your eyes. I know where your mind will be. The mind will be in the market. Of what use then is this puja? Of what benefit will be the bhajan or the dhyana?" So instantly I understood that Swami is not downplaying these sadhanas. It is because of the lack of one-pointedness, concentration of our mind, that Swami is trying to point out that these sadhanas may not be effective fully unless you do it with the way he has told us. And so as a single sadhana, it may not produce the desired result. But the Divine Master hence gave a revised prescription. As you all know, in Kali Yuga, it is mentioned that Namasmarana itself is enough. Swami gave a edited or revised prescription at this stage of the Kali Yuga. It's a double-pronged one. Namasmarana, the Lord's name on the one hand, and Niswartha Seva on the other. And that is why Sant Kabir used to say, "Dil mein Ram, haath mein Kaam." God in our hearts and work in our hands. Anyway, Seva, now we come to, this is one sadhana which is very dear to Swami. Times without number, Bhagavan has said, "Hands that help are holier than lips that pray." He has named the very organization which he has founded or blessed as Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization. Ours is the only organization which has the suffix Seva. There are a number of other spiritual organizations. None of them have this prefix or suffix Seva. However, it does not mean that this organization is going to take up a number of developmental works and improve the lot of the society. Yes, it may happen as a spillover effect. But the main meaning is that those who join this organization will use seva as an expression of prema, love, as the primary and predominant form of sadhana in their onward journey towards realization of the absolute. Swami once said, seva is superior to puja because in puja you are constricting or confining the Lord to a small idol or photograph and worshipping, whereas in seva you are worshipping the huge manifest form of the Lord, Virata Swarupa, as we call it. And to me, in one way, seva looks the highest form of meditation also. Because meditation, by definition, is the constant flow of thoughts in one direction to the exclusion of all other thoughts. And when we are immersed in seva, what happens? We forget our body, we forget our thirst, our hunger, we forget our family. There's only one stream of thought which is going immersed in the work our mind is. And this is meditation. The self in us has gone out. So we have become selfless. The aim of all spiritual sadhana is to become selfless. And it is only in seva that you have this. Only in seva we say selfless service. There is no selfless japa, there is no selfless meditation or selfless bhajan. Only in seva you find it. Now this seva can be done it has to be done at the individual level, at the family level, and at the group level. At the individual level, to start with, it is an attitude. The attitude of always trying to be helpful to others, waiting for the opportunity to grab it and do that useful work. And when it comes to this excelling ourselves in individual seva, very important it is for all of us who take up jobs, youngsters I mean, especially devotees of Swami, they should not advertise Swami in the offices, especially in public dealing offices where you are dealing directly with the public. Your attitude should be one of being smiling and trying to help them, help, help, help. My dearest friend, Mr. Rommel, who inspired me in my life, he used to sport a badge, "Do it now." That should be our attitude. And thereby we live Swami's teaching, his message, that your lives should be my message. And in individual seva, the one form of seva which Swami is very particular, Swami says it should be there by default, otherwise you cannot move forward. And that is seva done to our parents, parental seva. In one interview, I told Swami, "Swami, I am trying to take care of my parents well, but they are getting aged, Swami. Please bless them." Swami said, "Yes, I will bless. But why should we take good care of our parents?" he asked. We gave some answers, but Swami said, "I will tell you. It is parents who give you food to eat, food, the basic requirement for a human being. And from this food, as you all doctors know, comes the blood. And when both of these combine, comes our thoughts, because the origin of thoughts also is from the subtlest form of food." Swami Vivekananda had mentioned about this long back. Now we all know by medical science. The origin of thoughts also is from the food which we eat. So Swami said, "Food do, blood do, head do." And when these three combine, we develop the capacity to earn our livelihood. And that is called in Telugu duddu. So Swami said, "Food do, head do, blood do, duddu, everything parents only give." And that is why they are not parents. They are pay rent. That is like a tenant in a house. You are always indebted to your parents, and you should lead your life serving them that particular way. And again, in some other instance, it seems Swami had said, when a child is born, after the initial formalities are over, the nurse cleans the child and all. The child is brought to the mother and shown, also for identification's sake. The mother then happily gets up and takes the child and shows it to the father, who is waiting outside. And the father, after the child grows up to a certain extent, takes him to the guru, India's ancient culture, Gurukulam. And the guru takes the child verily to God himself. So Swami said, four steps: mother, father, guru, God. If you have not served your mother, father properly, you have no right to even look at the third and the fourth steps. That is the importance of serving our parents. Swami has so beautifully and emphatically put it. Anyway, service done at the family level is also important. As you know, especially in countries like India, the family is the fundamental unit in the society. And if all the members of the family are in the same wavelength of thinking, in the same page, their individual evolution and progress is also speeded up. The third is seva, service done at the group level. And that is why our Bhagwan founded or blessed the Satya Sai Seva organization. Because again, if done, as you know, any work in a group, the effects both external and internal, our evolution also, is excellent. And when seva is done in a group, Swami has given some guidelines to us. There are about five guidelines mainly. Firstly, the seva that is done should be need-based. That is, it should correspond exactly with the need of the community whom you are trying to serve. Just because you have something in excess, you cannot give it and say, I am doing seva. And in this respect, I shall quickly narrate a small incident which happened when I was serving in Hyderabad before coming to Puttaparthi. Just near our house, there was a school for the visually challenged children. About 150 children were there. We used to go there, and our Balvikas teachers used to conduct Balvikas. I, as a doctor, we used to render small medical help and all. A time came when people started coming to the school and trying to celebrate their birthday. Their name will be written on a blackboard, and they will arrange a very good meal, a sumptuous meal for the children, either lunch or dinner. Initially, children were very happy, but with passage of time, they started developing digestive disturbances, diarrhea, etc. And you know how difficult it will be if the visually challenged children have problems like diarrhea. And even the caretakers were finding it difficult to keep the washrooms and the restrooms, as you know, clean and neat. So what we thought, we made all the children sit together one day and asked him, children, please tell us what will make you most happy. And then the children said, uncle, please take us to an open place. Here, because of our lack of vision, we are scared to walk at all, fearing that we may hit our head against a pillar or the wall. So we walk very carefully and cautiously, at least for a day. Please take us to an open park. We want to run and run. So we arranged a program, hired a bus, and we sent a pilot team of our Balvikas children. They received the children with Veda chanting and all, and then we took them for breakfast and light tea. Then we made them all stand in a row. And then we told them, we will now count 1, 2, 3, go. And once we say go, all of you can start running. We did that, and the children ran and ran, ran and ran, till they were panting. And then we stopped them, then brought them back, made them sit. We had some special games, especially meant for blind children. Some musical program, which all of you know, called Antakshari. Then we served them a good lunch and brought them back. The lesson from this is that seva should be need-based. Secondly, it should give opportunity for as many people as possible, because it is a positive dharmic work. I would like to quote the incident in Ramayana, where Lord Rama could have killed Ravana with a single arrow, standing where he was. But he didn't do that. He took along with him all sorts of beings Vanaras, the monkeys, apes, Jambavan-like, and then human beings, and even the little squirrel had its place. So in a dharmic work, as many as numbers should participate, and that is why we should follow that dictum. Third, the seva should help in the spiritual evolution of the individuals who are rendering the seva. Because ultimately, we should know that yes, we are trying to improve the lot of the people whom you are serving, but it should result in our spiritual evolution, which means broadening our hearts, widening of our individual consciousness, so that a time comes when with divine grace, the individual consciousness will merge with the universal consciousness. The fourth requirement is, the seva should ensure that human values are transmitted down the line. They percolate down the line, because seva is not a mechanical act. It is a spiritual exercise. And Swami does say, has asked us to do seva on the one hand for our evolution, on the other hand, that the human values of Satya Dharma, Shanti, Prema and Ahimsa, which Bhagwan has told, gets percolated down the line. And finally, the seva should become a model for the society. As you all know, Swami himself has said that he has constructed these hospitals, these universities, colleges, not to solve all the medical and educational problems in the society, but to set up a model so that other organizations and even the government also perhaps can replicate that. I would now spend only another 5 minutes by talking on the qualifications, the requirements for an individual to do seva in the way Bhagwan has advised us. Again, there are 5 requirements. First, I'll tell in Telugu the names. Arogya, Prarthana, Tapana, Tyaga, Prema. First is Arogya or sound health. Fundamental to success, both in the material world and in the spiritual world, is the presence of a sound and robust health. But often the value and importance of health is realized after it is lost. Swami once asked us in an interview, how do you define health? And we started as usual with the famous World Health Organization, WHO definition. Swami, health is a state of complete physical. Swami stopped us. And then he said, I will tell you. And that was the best definition of health which I heard. Swami said, health is a state which depends on ahara, that is the food you eat, and if there is any aberration in it, we know of the lifestyle diseases which we see in plenty now. Then vihara, the place where you go, or the exercise, physical exercise. We all know sedentary life, or life going to clubs, late night sleep, all these are contributing to the lifestyle diseases, which account for nearly 70% of the ailment in the society. Third, achara, our conduct. We again know of ego clashes in offices, which leads to a lot of mental tensions, and which again impacts the heart. Then uchara, the way we speak, Swami said. And Swami said, if you become angry once, you will lose energy equal to eating 3 months at a time. And last, Swami said, is vichara, our thoughts. And in this, Swami said, ahara, the food we eat, and the vichara, our thoughts, are the most important. And when it comes to thoughts, it is now conclusively proved by scientists, researchers, especially in our own National Institute of Mental Health, that the thoughts which we harbor determine the function of an important endocrine gland in our brain, called hypothalamus. And with bizarre thinking or negative thinking, the function of the hypothalamus gets disturbed and it starts producing the corticotropin releasing hormone in excess. This leads to excess steroids, and steroids, as you know, are immunosuppressive and also can be the origin of mitogenesis, mitotic activity, cancer. That is why in an interview, when one super specialist doctor, Dr. Mohan Vamshi, asked Swami, Swami, the incidence of cancer is rising in Andhra Pradesh, our state. What's the reason? Swami said, Dani kuda, hari, vari, kari, he said. We thought only for heart disease. And especially important, he said, worry, always thinking about. And he said that is because, of course, Swami told a little more philosophically, Daiva Preeti Ledu, Papa Bhiti Poindi, Sanganiti Ledu. That is, people are not believing in God, people are not afraid of sin, and moral values in the society are getting degraded. That is why cancer incidence is also rising. And now we see, yes, that is also proved medically to some extent by the National Institute of Mental Health. The second requirement for seva, as I told the five requirements, is prarthana, prayer. And the prayer should come from the depth of our heart, from the innermost recesses, from every cell in the body. Seva doesn't come on a platter. It is not so easy to get opportunities for seva. That's why I tell our friends in India, overseas doctors, when they come, they really literally make us feel that they are valuing every minute of the time which they are spending in seva. And I also remember of one incident in Puttaparthi in the veranda. You know, one very senior person from Hyderabad was sitting. He's a very well connected man, rich man, nice person also. When Swami came near, he said, Swami, please give me a chance for seva. Swami closed his eyes for a few seconds and then said, E janmalo asukritam ledu. In this birth you don't have that fortune. Next birth we shall see. The third requirement for seva qualification is tapana or yearning. You should yearn to do seva. Seva should run in every nerve, in every blood vessel of your body. And in this connection, in an interview, one young gentleman told Swami, Swami, I am in a software job, I am not having time to do seva. Then Swami said, these birds are coming from here, not from here. Did you really feel bad that you are not able to do seva because of lack of time? Did you really pine for seva? Did you earn for it? Did you pray to me intensely? Did you sit in front of my photo and cried, Swami, I want to do seva, but I am not having time? No, you did not do this. If you had done, I would have created time for you, because I am the overlord of space and time. This is what Swami said. And fourthly, what we require for ideal Sai Seva is tyaga or sacrifice. And that is why Swami has given that beautiful dictum, God first, world next, self last. But we may be doing seva, but when once we get a small individual or a family problem, the whole thing gets reversed. Self first, it happens that way. And this sacrifice should be in terms of the time we give. Swami is very particular of the time we give, our energies and our expertise. Once a group of our office bearers of Satya Sai Seva organization were called by Swami. Swami asked them, how many hours per day are you devoting for seva? Service, selfless service. They said, Swami, 4 hours a week. Swami said, shameful. Out of the 24 hours, 6 hours should go for your sleep. 12 hours should be for your office work, your personal work, your family responsibilities, etc. And remaining 6 hours a day should be for samaja seva, societal service. This is Swami's dictum. And the last one, which is required, the fifth one, is prema or love. This may look a little surprising. It should be there by default, because what is seva? Seva is nothing but love in action. And if there is no love, it is not seva at all. It is some, as Swami says, showy service. It's not real selfless service, it's some showy service. And in the case of our medical, in the case of our field of medicine, one thing which I often repeat, Bhagwan told in all my talks, is to doctors especially, if you practice medicine with love, it becomes Medicare. That is, you are taking care of the patient. You are taking him in a loving embrace. But if you practice medicine without love, it becomes medicine, M-E-D-I-S-I-N, Mahapapamu, sin, Swami has told. Of course, this applies to all other fields, because I am a doctor, I have mentioned that. And finally, we have to remember, before I conclude, that it is not the amount or quantum of seva that is important. It is the spirit, the bhav, the motive with which that is done. And that is why in the Ramayana, you know, The squirrel was lifting a small stone and trying to put in the bridge. It attracted the attention of Lord Rama, who picked it up and stroked it. But when quoting this squirrel incident, one has to be very careful. Because the squirrel is such a small creature. For it, that small stone must have meant a big weight. But if we have the strength of an elephant, and we say, I will do the squirrel seva, lift a small stone, we are fooling ourselves, because we cannot fool Swami, who is the all-knower. So the equation is, seva should be done corresponding to our capacity and capabilities, perhaps a little more than that. Then it would be true seva. I think we have traveled a long distance. I have spoken enough. Thanks for your patience. Let us thank our Master, our Bhagwan, our sweet Lord, for giving us an opportunity to reflect on things that pertain to His own glory and to the teachings which He has so compassionately told us in simple terms. Jai Sai Ram.